Welcome to the Mad Tech Podcast from ExchangeWire, bringing you the latest news and views from the world of ad tech, media, and marketing.
Hello, and welcome to the Mad Tech Podcast. I am Grainne Reid, Head of Marketing at ExchangeWire, and I'm delighted to be joined by our COO, Lindsay Rowntree. How are you?
I'm very well, thank you.
And alongside Lindsay, we've got John Still, Head of Content. John, how are you?
I'm very well, thank you for having me.
Well, this week we're going to be diving into three big news stories. First, the tech giants who collectively pulled in more than $150 billion in ad revenue in the first quarter of 2026. Second, a new AP North study highlights the widening generational divide in how teens and adults consume and trust news. And the third story will be Omnicom, as they have begun testing AI agents designed to bypass traditional ad tech intermediaries. So, first up, Meta, Alphabet, Microsoft, and Amazon have collectively earned more than $150 billion, which equates to about £73.85 billion in advertising revenue during the first quarter of the year. The majority of the ad revenue was made by Alphabet, thanks to Google Search and YouTube, who reported more than $87 billion in ad revenue during the quarter. Meta made over $55 billion, while Amazon earned over $17 billion. Microsoft didn't reveal its exact revenue during the period, but analytics estimate it to have reached about $5 billion. So, a lot of money and a lot of numbers. Yeah, but Lindsay, what do you make of these figures?
I mean, they are very telling that it's a good time to be a walled garden. The growth is quite substantial. And there's some interesting points. I suppose in particular from the Google and the Meta results. So Meta saw not only an increase in ad impressions, but an increase in cost per ad as well. So they're seeing more and more budget come into their platform. They're seeing more and more people kind of available people to be advertised to, which is great for them. And they've also kind of a complete reworking of how their ad engine operates, kind of under the hood. And that feels very, very interesting, because I think it's going to work really well for them. Particularly, you know, we talked last week about them going into CTV space. With this new kind of AI built engine, I think they're going to see just even more. I think that growth is going to catapult even more. And from the Google side of things, two things have stuck out to me. Well, three things. YouTube growth, probably unsurprising, but YouTube is continuing to go from strength to strength. And, you know, we're not seeing kind of like, I think it was like 10%. So it's not massive, but it's still a significant growth area for them. What the interesting for me was paid search, and search revenue was up 31%. And they basically said that in the earnings call, they came out and said that was a real area of strength for them, and the causation of it was AI. And what I think confused me was, well, actually, surely AI is reducing the number of clicks, because if you go and AI overviews were increasing their search revenue. And for me, I think AI is actually reducing search revenue, because if you Google something and then you get an AI overview with results in it, then you're not going to click. So where's that revenue coming from? And I saw some stats somewhere that was something like, you know, 20%. There are 20% more search queries as a result of AI overviews. So it's driving a massive result in search queries. And while clicks are down in that area, kind of the overall net result is more clicks. That means more revenue. And what they're testing in certain areas as well is embedded ads in AI overviews. We haven't got it in the UK yet, but it's in, like, I think Kenya, Australia, Canada, Indonesia, the US. I think 12 markets, kind of a mixture of different types of markets across the world. You know, Canada and Australia are always classic test markets for anything that Google and any walled gardens do. So an interesting kind of cross range of different markets to test there. Embedded AI overviews, which is only going to increase their search revenue, and you know, they'll help them compete against the likes of ChatGPT, OpenAI even more when it comes to, you know, you had this sort of notion that Google search was going to plummet, so it was going to flail, because the AI, the LLMs were going to take over. And once they introduce ads, which obviously OpenAI have done, then that's the death knell for Google search. But it's proven not to be the case at all. We're seeing even more growth. And if they're embedding ads into AI overviews, we're going to see that grow even more, from my perspective. The other thing that I thought was interesting on the flip side of that was there was a 5% decrease in revenue from AdSense, which to me spells signals, you know, we're seeing huge growth within the walled gardens, where we see AdSense, you know, often on sort of mid to long tail publishers. a decline in that signals kind of a concern for the open web. That we, you know, we talk about a lot, kind of like what the open web is getting more and more squeezed. Certainly the mid to long tail is getting more and more squeezed, and there's kind of fewer opportunities for them to get revenue. The fact that we're seeing a 5% decline in AdSense revenue for Google, I think kind of like marks that as well.
What do you think will happen?
I think that it will continue to decline. I think the plight of the, you know, every single publisher, and, you know, we're included in that as well. We're a mid-long tail publisher. We don't use AdSense, but we monetize our site in certain ways. Every single publisher has to think about new ways of getting revenue, and traffic is no longer going to be the way to do it. And if you're looking at traffic as your main way of getting revenue, then you're going to have to really question kind of how you can continue like running a business, if you are indeed running a business from it. You know, there's like, for example, you know, we have events as a business. Then we talked recently a lot about geo, so looking at kind of how you are your visibility in LLMs and kind of if there's any opportunity to get revenue through that. So ensuring that you're optimizing as best you can for SEO, so that you're not being penalized by SEO in Google, and also not being penalized in the LLMs. They're going to be the ways to kind of get traffic, but the traffic that you saw, and you need to look at ways to kind of drive engagement. Maybe it's subscription models, maybe it's, you know, other things. You have to look at kind of what are you bringing that differentiates you from any other mid to long tail publisher. Otherwise, you're not going to be able to continue, I don't think.
Yeah. John, I'm going to come to you on these figures and see what your thoughts are on the big four dominating in,
yeah. Yeah, I had the same takeaways, Lindsay. I looked at the AdSense number and it was, good. The open web's going to take a little battering there. And it just kind of it brings together and crystallizes everything we've spoken about over the last few months in terms of the power of the walled gardens. I like the squeeze. Squeeze was a nice term. Squeeze on the open web. Meta being up 33%. And, you know, you'll know my feelings on Meta.
No, John, what are they? Do you like Meta?
It still surprises me that there's such growth in advertising on these things. And it is just, it's the unprecedented and unmatched reach and scale they offer. Like, advertisers had a lot of conversations in the past few weeks about spending on the social platforms and the importance of kind of the safety element of it and how creative's being made and purpose and stuff. But ultimately, like, we're in a difficult time economically, and people need the quickest, most direct way of explaining what the budget went and what it did, how many people it reached is the easiest way of explaining that. So yeah, Meta, Google, Amazon to a point now as well. People can't touch that. People can't offer the same thing. It is, you know, we are looking at times of least friction for marketers. And so, obviously, personal level, like, it disappoints me. I do not like seeing the squeeze of the open web and the contraction. And as a head of content, you know, what we've just talked about is frightening stuff. But it doesn't surprise me. Like, disappoints me, sadly. But also, it is a tricky time. And I guess that's where the wind's blowing.
Yeah, I mean, I agree. And the Amazon thing is very interesting. Like, Amazon is obviously absolutely one to watch when it comes to ad revenue, because that's not the first thing you think about when you think of Amazon. You know, I've had conversations with people that, you know, Amazon are really kind of gunning to be the biggest DSP, and they don't want it to just come from within their own ecosystem. Obviously, the agentic commerce is huge for them. You know, look at the Amazon ecosystem. It's fascinating. You've got agentic commerce, and also you've got Prime. You've got kind of all the streaming content, and the live sports kind of within that as well is very, very interesting. But Amazon don't just want to exist within a vacuum of that. They want to be the biggest DSP generally. If that's true, and the growth they're seeing shows that they are taking this very, very seriously.
Yeah, one to watch for sure.
Mm.
Yeah. Okay, well, I'm going to move us on to our second news story this week. Just obviously
cheery notes there on our first one.
Yeah, that wasn't very positive, was it?
We're seeing
wonderful growth in the advertising industry. We should be really positive about it.
I thought we started out quite level, and then it sort of just
I brought it down.
Took a spiral, yeah. You brought a bad sense in it, through it.
Yeah, I'm sorry, guys, because I like to be positive where I can.
You are. You're normally the positive of the two of us.
Oh, I'm sorry, I do apologise, everyone.
Well, let's see if you can rein it back.
No.
An AP Nork Media Insight Project report released in April 2026 titled The Evolving News Landscape, Comparing Media Habits and Trust Between Teens and Adults, highlights significant generational differences in news consumption and trust. The study, based on a nationally representative survey of over 2,000 respondents, including teenagers as young as 13, reveals a fractured media ecosystem where legacy institutions are sharing the stage with newer independent voices. There were reports that teens are the only age group where a majority, 57%, get news from social media daily, whereas 74% of adults, 65 and older, rely on television for news. Influencers and independent creators have become a major force, with 81% of teens and 57% of Americans overall get news from influencers. Adults 65 and older are more likely than some younger age groups to rely on local news outlets such as TV, radio, and newspapers, while teens aged 13 to 17 are more likely than older adults over 65 to get local news from local influencers or independent creators. And when it comes to hard news, such as politics, social issues, the economy, only 12% of teens qualify as avid consumers compared to 35% of adults 65 and over, underscoring a widening generational divide in what people pay attention to. So again, a lot of stats and numbers there.
You're enjoying this, aren't you?
I really am, yeah. Tripping up over myself. But yes, I guess a lot of stats there, but were you surprised by any of them, Lindsay?
I think I was maybe surprised that I wasn't surprised at all about the youth stats in terms of kind of they're looking at where they're getting their information from. Like it's creators, it's influencers. But what I think what was interesting about that was that they're looking at authority over followers. They're not so interested in how many followers someone has for them to kind of feel like I trust that person. They need to look at if it's sponsored, and they need to look at if it's verified and it has authority, and that's what makes them trust it as a news source. Because I think it plays well for obviously creators, but also it plays well for news sources, for legitimate news sources like Reuters, etc., on that appear and publish. I can't get any words out. That publish their news on social platforms. I remember when Zara, our marketing and events manager, first started Exchange Wire about 5 years ago. She was saying that she got all her news from social media, and we were all like, "What? Oh, what? Really? Oh God, kids today." She's quite a bit younger than me. Kids today, seriously. And she's like, "Yeah, we should be on Instagram. So follow us on Instagram, everyone, because we now are on Instagram and it's doing very well." But I was at the time, I was like, "That is nonsense. Who the hell's getting their news from Instagram?" And now I really see like so many people getting their news from Instagram, and all the big news sources are appearing on different social platforms, and as well they should be, because it's helping. If that's where the young folk are getting their news from, then they need to make sure that they're front and centre there and kind of taking it seriously. I think that for me was interesting. But also what's interesting is the swing towards a trust across every single demographic towards local trusted news sites. I think that was very, very interesting. And there is, obviously this is a US study, but I think it applies, it might be slightly different in the UK, because obviously we have the BBC, and the BBC has a different connotation in terms of trust levels versus what the different news sources in the US might be. But it felt like it was interesting that local news sources were thought of as a very, very trusted way of getting verified news and information for all age ranges. And certainly kind of, you know, when you look at sort of 13 to 17 year olds, how they're getting their information. Like when I was 13 to 17, I don't remember anything about what I was doing to get news. I don't think I gave a shit, but it's interesting that they genuinely are taking it seriously and want to get their news from trusted sources. It's very encouraging.
Yeah, well, I guess like as a younger teenager, newspapers would have been more of a thing. They would have been in the house a lot more, whereas now...
I wasn't flicking through the tabloids or the broadsheets on the kitchen table every morning. I can tell you that for nothing. Oh, just FYI, folks, it was a tabloid household, my household, not a broadsheet one. Yeah, just in case there's any doubt.
Yeah.
Embarrassing.
John, what about you? What did you make of these stats?
Yeah, it is really interesting. Like, no surprise to see the rise of the influencer and how that's, you know, it's where people are going and getting this news from. I think the surprise is in what Lindsay says, is that it's not just younger audiences, it's older audiences who are also going to influencers. Love the local news angle, like the re-rise of local news can't come quick enough for me. The fact that local news influencers are becoming a thing is quite encouraging to me. Like that a lot. And yeah, it's we're in an era where that authenticity is really needed and necessary now. Like, trust's been eroded. Big news is like, it's massive and it's daunting, but local news actually gets to the heart of what people need in their communities. And so, no, it's nice to see it making kind of making an inroad into the psyche of younger people as well.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think it's interesting as well, kind of like what we mean by like a local influencer or local creator, because are they specifically or like only ever talking about what's happening in a local area? Because, like, for example, so where I live in Northeast London, there's lots of different local influencers that I follow that like tell me what's going on in the area, or kind of what new restaurants are opened or what shops are closing, or kind of what's happening from a sort of business perspective or kind of a community perspective. And I think that if I followed, say, somebody who was specifically a food influencer or kind of a restaurant influencer, would I then trust them more if they started talking about other local issues happening in the area? I think I probably would do, because I trust them from that perspective. I know they're local and they have meaning. So I think that it changes the nature of what you can be as a creator and the kind of influence you do have over people. You might think you're just like a food creator or a food influencer, but there's a lot more you could probably share with your followers. I think this is probably how cults start, isn't it? So actually, maybe don't do that. Maybe that's a terrible idea.
No.
I'm going to backtrack on that.
I love that. We went from...
There's nothing there about cults. It just depends on the journey of the follower. If you've been there since the beginning, you're not paying them, giving them access to your online.
Goes from food influencer to like slight cult religious leader. Influence to absolute cult domination.
The restaurant cult. Them so cold,
but this might be kind of what kicked off the Manosphere. You don't know, like, so there we go. I just
imagine Louis Theroux.
Let's not go into that. Talking is that a good idea? Yeah,
Louis Theroux. So it all started with dumplings.
You were reviewing pizza restaurants, and now
now you have 17 million people live on your compound.
I've gone,
where else would you, God's truth?
Totally.
I'd have a cult in Ibiza, no question.
Yeah, okay, well, I'm just going to...
Where do we go from here?
I can carry on talking if you want, like, there is definitely an opportunity. There's an opportunity
no, that's fine.
To understand. It helps us understand, obviously from a US perspective, but I think that there's a global lens that can be placed here as well. And I'd love to see this done in other markets to actually understand exactly how and why people of all different ages, because it's also lovely that it went from the age of 13 to sort of 65 plus. Like, you know, that's not often that you will get a research report that goes that deeply. So we get a real understanding of how people are using the news. And there's a lot more overlap than we probably think. A lot more overlap, and that's really encouraging, because also it will tell certainly kind of creators who they're talking to and understanding their followers better, but also actual verified legitimate news sources like CNN, etc., you know, who they're talking to and kind of, and actually are they different? Because, you know, if I think about any of the big publications, like in the UK, the Times, the Guardian, Telegraph, whatever, they now have multiple different handles for different types of content. So you've got sports, you've got movies, you've got US versus kind of APAC. Like, there's a lot more they could probably do with trying to kind of produce different news for different types of people. And I think these kinds of research reports kind of help that. And that will help them, like, we, you know, we talked about the open web kind of being squeezed. That will help them be able to kind of reinforce their value, which is really important at the moment.
Yeah. It's,
how was that for a segue? Was that, yeah?
No, yeah. And it's sorry, true. And it's where, you know, the learning is always, and we're seeing the major publishers trying to adapt, but be where your audience are. And you said it to, you know, if in our case, Azara brought us to Instagram, we've gone to TikTok. We are kind of across these platforms now because we know that that's where our audience are living. And that's the same for any publisher. Guardian did it well to start with. They started doing two camera kind of authentic reporting, but in an influencer style. We're seeing that across the board now. But there's still, I was at a conference last week, and we have a habit of talking in the industry in a very kind of London-centric, youth-centric manner. And in fact, like, we've got a much older, more affluent audience who are still using the different channels that perhaps you don't expect. So there's room for the broadsheets, there's room for tabloids, there's room for BBC News at 6 p.m, as well as there is older generation TikTokers, like older influencers as well. And so, yeah, at the heart of it, always just know where your audience are. And the moral is they're in very different places than they used to be.
And they're everywhere.
Everywhere. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Great. Well, I'm going to move us on then to our third and final story this week. Omnicom revealed last week that it has been testing the use of AI agents to carry out live media buys for several clients. This cuts out the ad tech middlemen, with the agents automatically purchasing ad inventory directly from publishers. CEO John Wren said that shortening the path between Omnicom and publishers is a strategic priority. John, I'm going to come to you. How dramatically could we see the ad tech landscape change as a result of this agentic media buying?
Yikes.
Yikes.
Yeah, this is interesting. Mm-hmm. It is something that's been coming for a while, I think. Like, we've seen so much holdco investment in ad tech over the past few years. We've had WPP buy InfoSum. We've had Publicis buy Lotame. IPG did the Acxiom deal before Omnicom then swooped in and bought both, which John Wren was quite proud of himself in his speech, talking about how they held off on the Acxiom deal and then got both for a song later on. But yeah, this is like agency direct to publisher without the use of DSP or SSP is like, it is going to sound some alarm bells. I think it's interesting, and holdcos realized that their place in the world has changed now, and their place in the agency landscape is changing, and they needed to take control of it. And this seems like the beginning of a major move in that. And yeah, controlling more of not just what they used to do as the intermediary, but actually the whole transaction. And the agentic side has only sped that process up.
Lindsay, I'm going to come to you on this.
Yeah, so I agree with everything you said, John. And I think that there's a few things that come to mind. So first of all, like, obviously they've legitimately started. This is not like some pie in the sky idea. There's legitimate media budget being spent through it, and actual kind of results and campaigns happening. So it's happening. It's real. And John Wren in his earnings call was talking about, he doesn't seem that keen on ad tech, in the sense of he referred to it as a toll that gets paid ultimately by the client, which, you know, no one can argue with, because that is what it is. And he referred to it as the messy middle. And again, it is quite messy. And I think that what I was thinking about, how this ties in with the story we were talking about last week, with the index exchange story, with containerization, the containerized DSP in Bedrock, with Index Cloud. And what it feels like is kind of there's a problem needs to be solved, and both Omnicom and Index are coming at it from two different directions. So it's a question of where does decisioning and where does intelligence sit within the stack anymore? And so Omnicom seems to be betting that it sits up the top of the stack by near them, in the agentic side of things, and they have the control and the power over what happens and who makes the decisions. And Index appear to be betting that it sits more down near where the supply is. And so they relocate the DSP to nearer the supply.
Yeah.
And so I think that there is a world where both of those could exist? There probably is. But also there's a world where what Omnicom are doing is very, very interesting, because it helps them work, like it brings them even closer to the publisher relationship. So for premium publishers, this is arguably great news. You could also argue it's great news for someone like Ozone in the UK, because Ozone can act as that kind of layer to help the agentic, as long as they can plug into the agentic platforms, because it's built on ADCP, they can act as the layer to kind of talk to the premium publishers that they're plugged into, which could be very interesting for someone like Ozone. But it does question kind of what the purpose of everything in between is, if everything's going to be handled at the kind of the top layer, the top of the stack by the agentic side of things, then what does that look like for the rest of the ecosystem? And what's it like for where budget goes? Because again, we talked about the squeezed middle in terms of the squeezed publisher layer. The mid to long tail again get further squeezed out by this model, because the agentic model is only going to be operating, talking to, you know, arguably premium publishers, premium sources, premium broadcasters. So again, this kind of this sense of kind of what the open web looks like and the future of the open web, I think it brings into question. Whereas what the Index side of things, what they've done is kind of they've almost given a boost to the open web by saying that it gives a boost to independent ad tech, and it gives a boost to the open web. The Omnicom model is kind of doing the opposite. There's obviously a world where they can both exist, but I wonder kind of how that will play out.
Yeah. That will be quite interesting. And I guess, like, what does it mean for the other agencies as well, other holdcos?
We'll see, I think. Yeah. They will, you know, I've mentioned some of the deals that were done in terms of the ad tech that they'd bought and brought in-house. And I think Omnicom's model will be the first one that's out, but we'll see, because there's going to be more following over the next few months. I imagine there'll be similar moves to, you know, they talk about the messy middle. There'll be moves to kind of clean it up. I'm wary of replacing the grey areas we have with black boxes, which is something the industry needs to be super careful of. And walled gardens are already doing that to an extent. So that's where the open web needs to kind of strike back, I think. So that would be my fear, that we just turn into a, you know, after all the talk of transparency over the last decade, AI has just sent us into a place where, oh no, it's like you give them this and it gets results. And we're just back to, yeah, the black boxes.
No, you're totally right about that. We've been hankering after control for so long.
Yeah.
And then, you know, even when PMax launched, when Google launched PMax, there was some people were like, yeah, great, let's put my budget into it. It's going to do everything for me. And then they went, oh, actually, I wouldn't mind a little bit more information. I wouldn't mind a little bit more of an idea of what my budget is doing. And so Google opened up controls and allowed more information, allowed more insight. Like, this is taking us back into that realm again. And it'll only go so far before people, before managers, campaign managers go, I do kind of want to know what's going on actually in the campaign, because I've got clients asking me and I haven't got a freaking clue, because the agent's doing it all for me. And clients do still want answers. Clients do still, you know, I think in terms of transparency, gone are the days where clients are asking for log level data. They were asking for that. They didn't really know what it meant or what to do with it. But I think those days are probably gone to a degree. But they are still going to want to know what's exactly what's going on and why and how and what you're going to do about it. And yes, okay, you could just ask the agent what they're going to do about it, and they'll tell you. But it feels a step removed, and it then begs the question of kind of what the future of the agency looks like from a resource perspective. Will it still be kind of a planning and buying shop, or will it be much more kind of an AI and a kind of IT operation? And what does again, something I've asked many times is, like, somebody like me who started my my career in digital as a junior search exec at Publicis, at Starcom as it was then. What would someone like me, how would someone like me start in the industry nowadays? Kind of what does that look like? And I think that that's going to completely change the nature of it. And this kind of actually kind of, you know, putting all your money into kind of saying, like, betting big on agentic is kind of answering that question to a degree, because it is going to change things. And the initial conversations will always be like, oh, it's great because it means that all of our team will have more time to do strategy and be able to do like more thinking and less reporting. Yes, until eventually they're not needed anymore, and actually the people are disintermediated, not the ad tech. Well, actually, that applies to everything. If you disintermediate ad tech, you're also disintermediating all the people there as well. So ad tech is gone, the people in agencies are gone, AI chatting to each other. There's the world's over. So
Skynet. Cool. We made Skynet.
There we go again.
Go home.
Yeah. Okay.
I spoke, I think it was one of the first coffee words we did. I had spoke to Laura Kell, who's doing a lot in AI at Havas, and our conversation just ended and was like, oh, maybe we'll just all live on yachts while the robots do everything. It's like, I still cling to that dream.
That would be lovely.
We'll have an exchange where you got. We'll film things on there, and the robots can watch.
Because I was talking when I did the coffee with Gemma Spence at BML, which is brilliant. Gemma Spence is, but she was talking. You know, I asked the question kind of when we're talking about advertising from a commerce perspective, agentic from a commerce perspective. Who are we actually going to be advertising to? Are we advertising to a human or to a robot? Because if we all have agents doing our job for us. So, for example, if you go on Amazon now, you can ask, is it Rufus on Amazon?
Rufus.
You can ask Rufus stuff about a product, because you can't see it in the ridiculous product listings that last for about 17,000 scrolls down. I'll just ask Rufus, kind of, I was trying to buy bibs for a child. Is this machine washable? And it took about 25 minutes to answer because there was so much content for it to scroll through to try and get the information it needed. But in that context, like, if I'm going to go to Rufus and say, find me X, find me Y, you know, I'm not being advertised to anymore. The agent's being advertised to, because they need to find me the product. And that's, again, that changes everything. So the whole dynamic of what agentic looks like when it comes to kind of how we use it as consumers versus how agencies, et cetera, use it from an advertising perspective, the game is being completely changed. So when Omnicom say we're betting big on this and this is meaningful, we're actually running budget through this and we're actually seeing performance, let's not assume that that means that overnight everything's going to go agentic, because there's so much to understand still and so much is changing all the time. But the way that the technology is changing all the time, the way that we as consumers are using it is changing all the time. So there's still there's still going to be a million iterations from what Omnicom are doing right now to what they would be doing in a year's, 6 months, 3 months time. It's going to change completely. So we just need to keep an eye on it and not kind of, I suppose, not be Lindsay negative and be John positive.
The world isn't over yet.
Living on yachts. Yeah.
Maybe in 3 months you might find us on a yacht.
Cult on a compound in Ibiza just yet.
Not yet.
Yeah.
I mentioned this to you, Lindsay. I saw a post on LinkedIn last week. Absolutely cannot tell for the life of me whether it's a parody, whether it's humor, or whether it's an actual startup from San Francisco who posted it. But they posted, finding that Claude tokens have become too expensive, probably going to hire some people to do Claude's more menial tasks.
Oh.
That's just like, great, really good. We're hiring humans to code again.
We'd love that to be true. That's so funny. Claude's too expensive now. I might get some people to do it instead.
I just love that brilliant line of thought. It's like, great, yeah, we've
gone full circle.
We're devouring all our natural resources so quickly that the tokens aren't going to be available. So we're going to have to just have humans. Great, good. Loved it.
Scrap everything we've done for the last couple of years.
Back to humans.
Yeah. Amazing. Well, I'm going to end it there.
Oh, I was having so much fun.
Who knows where this could have gone. But thank you, John.
Thank you very much. That was great fun.
And thank you, Lindsay.
Thank you.
Cheery as ever.
Of course.
And thank you all for listening. And that's it for the MadTech Podcast this week. Tune in next week.
You've been listening to the MadTech Podcast, brought to you by ExchangeWire.